case for argument is Steve-O versus Keith. Mr. Brown.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Running for public office is the most noble act that can be performed by an American citizen. Mr. Alan Steve-O, in the matter before the Court, seeks to run for federal office. He seeks to run for the congressional office in Illinois' 10th congressional district. In an effort to qualify for the ballot in Illinois, Mr. Steve-O took it upon himself to collect signatures, and in fact he collected thousands of signatures. In the end, he roughly collected 7,000 signatures and deposited those signatures with the Illinois Board of Elections. His candidacy was challenged. Because his candidacy was challenged, the Elections Board reviewed his submission. Had his candidacy not been challenged, he would have been on the ballot. However, given the challenge, his signatures were counted, and he did not quite make it to 10,000-plus signatures, which is what Illinois required of the candidates in the 10th congressional district. Illinois generally requires that candidates, independent candidates for congressional office, collect a number of signatures equal to 5% of the vote cast in the last election. In Mr. Steve-O's case, that came to just over 10,000 signatures. Every fifth election cycle following the census, Illinois cuts that requirement in half and only requires that independent candidates collect a number of signatures equal to 5,000. It's no longer a percentage. It's just a flat $5,000 number figure. Had Mr. Steve-O been running in 2002 or 2012 for the exact same office in the exact same district in Illinois?
They say that they can't use the same criterion, because if the congressional district no longer exists, right, they don't have a denominator for their calculation. They don't know how many votes in the previous districts represented votes within the geographical boundaries of the new district.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's a legitimate point, isn't it?
A grossly overstated point, I believe, Your Honor. Illinois is the only state that does it that way. Other states in the country do, of course, require percentages.
How do they work it, then?
Indiana, for example, Your Honor, simply takes the precinct figures from the last election. It would be, for example, the 2000 election. Let's say it's the 2002 upcoming election. And armed with those precinct figures, Indiana takes a map of the new district and just superimposes the two and can generate a very close approximation of what the vote would have been in that district. And then they use those numbers.
So if they have the votes by precincts, they can superimpose the new map, and they know exactly which precincts from the previous districts fall within.
Yes, Your Honor.
More or less.
Uh-huh. Frankly, they don't like to do it because it takes a little work.
And do you say every other state does that?
I can't say that every other state does it. I know Indiana does it that way. I do know that no other state does it Illinois' way. No other state simply selects an arbitrary figure and says that's the number. The law in Illinois was passed back in 1973-74, I believe. And I believe, Your Honor, at that time, it was probably pretty close. 5,000 was probably pretty close to what would be expected of most candidates in most of the congressional districts. But in 30-plus years, the population of Illinois has increased, almost 2 million people. I think the number of representatives has decreased in Illinois, if I'm not mistaken. And then coupled with the motor voter law, I think all of that has conspired to drive the popular vote up, meaning the percentage, 5%, creates a figure which is a lot larger today than it was 35 years ago. So 5,000 votes is nowhere close to what's required in the following the census election cycles. So now we are faced with a comparison: 5,000 votes in the fifth election years and 10,000 in every other election years. what that proves.
You don't have any other cases, though, that involve disparities between future requirements and present requirements.
We don't, Your Honor. But I think there's a good reason for that.
Question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That's a novel question.
But I think there's a good reason for the lack of precedent. And the lack of precedent is a function of no other state does it. And Illinois is the only one.
Mr. Sewell can be a future candidate as well as a present one.
That's true, Your Honor. The district court was concerned about the lack of precedent. But the principle that I draw from cases like the Socialist Workers Party case and Norman against Reed and this court's decision in the Jurston case, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the principle is comparisons are useful and comparisons can show that means are not narrowly tailored to ends. We do it all the time in constitutional law. We do it all the time with equal protection theory in particular. The famous Tussman and Tenbruck article from years ago, speaking to equal protection, said that under-inclusiveness demonstrates something. It demonstrates if a law is really under-inclusive, it's not extended as far as it should be. It demonstrates that the laws really aren't necessary. So the fact that Illinois allows every fifth election cycle to skate on 5,000 signatures, doesn't require 10,000. That proves the fact that they don't require 10,000 in that election cycle. 10,000 is not necessary. 5,000 works quite well. In fact, apparently no one has ever qualified as an independent candidate in a congressional district using the 5,000 figure. So it really is deterring frivolous cluttering candidates. It works. It works very well. And 10,000 is not necessary, Your Honor.
Want to save the rest of your time? Or did you have more you wanted to say?
I saved 4 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor. Am I into my rebuttal time already?
No, I just thought you would come to a natural break. But go ahead. If you want to continue, you have time, sure.
Well, I did want to spend just 1 minute talking about relief, Your Honor. The state has argued that we have not joined indispensable parties, basically, that we should have joined the Lake County and the Cook County election offices because they print the ballots. And I did some research. I have found no case, no election case that supports that proposition. Instead, all of the election cases that I've read involve the authority that certifies the candidates. The assumption is that when told to correct a ballot, the Secretary of State or here the Elections Board will do it. And the printers, whoever they may be, will in fact make the changes. And there are lots and lots of cases out there that support that proposition, Supreme Court cases and lower court cases. So the notion that we didn't join enough parties, I think, is quite strained. The state also has argued, or at least argued below, and I believe they've abandoned the argument on appeal. They've argued latches, that it's too late in the day to make changes to the ballot. The state has been kind of coy about when the ballots need to be printed. They've yet to disclose that to the court or to me. But I do know from reading the cases, 30, 40 days out, it's not uncommon for a court to change the ballot. I counted 24 reported decisions in the federal and state courts that have changed ballots within 40 days of the election. So it's right now, I think we're 40 some odd days from the election. I think we have plenty of time to correct the ballot. The state did not argue latches in its brief specifically, but if there is any allusion to we're running out of time, I think the case law just proves that's not a problem, Your Honor. Of course, the longer we go and the closer the election gets, there could be problems. But at this stage, there really is not, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Legner?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Brett Wagner. I'm an assistant Illinois Attorney General, and I represent the defendants' appellees, the Illinois State Board of Elections, and its members in this action. Your Honors, this court should affirm the judgment of the district court.
Mr. Brown's suggestion that if you just decompose these districts into their precincts, you can easily compute a total number of votes from the previous election and then apply your 5% to that.
Well, I don't think that Mr. Brown suggested that it was easily done. I think he admitted that Indiana doesn't like doing it. It takes some measure of computation and some work to do that.
Sounds like really simple.
I think also a problem arises if
you have the votes by precinct, all you have to do is determine which precincts are in the new district, and then you look at a map and see where they were. You just have to identify the precincts in the new district and then look at the figure which shows votes by precinct from the previous election. It should take, 10 minutes.
Sure, right? To do the overlay. And on the one hand,
what's the bother?
First, that assumes that precincts aren't split, but that when the districts are redrawn, they're not drawn through as precincts.
You can forget that.
Okay. We recall that Stevo does not challenge this 5,000 requirement. He seeks to avail himself of it.
I understand. But what he's saying is, I think what he's trying to say is that even though the Supreme Court says 5% is okay, it's obviously too much because you have said, well, with a new district, 5,000 is fine, which is much less than 5% of the other district. If 5,000 is fine for a new district, it must be fine for the old district.
It's not the case that 5,000 is less than 5%. This year, in the 4th Congressional District, which is on the northwest side of Chicago, 5% is less than 5,000.
Yeah, but 4,200. He says it's usually more.
Sure.
And it was more when he collected his, when he failed. It was because he got 7,000 and he needed 10,000.
That's true.
So if Mr. Brown is right that it would take a few minutes to figure out the prior election of the precincts constituting the new district, and yet you say, well, I won't bother with that. 5,000 is plenty. Why isn't 5,000 plenty for the old districts?
Because the application of the 5,000 has always intended to be a second best alternative when there is no hard empirical data.
No, but we know it's not second best because you could use your 5%. You could compute your 5%.
We can make an estimation.
The fact that you don't do it suggests that you don't really care about 5%. What you care about is 5,000.
I don't think that's the case. I think what it shows is the General Assembly realized even the overlay, right, the redistricting overlay, looking at precinct data, is an estimation of what would happen or would have happened. But it's still an estimation nonetheless, and so is 5,000. And 5,000 isn't easily applied.
Why is it an estimate? It's the actual vote in the previous election of the precincts that constitute the new district.
What's the estimate? It's an estimate because you're bringing in voters to a vote pool who weren't enfranchised in the same way in that district. There can be different reasons voters vote. Excuse me, Your Honor?
What's the difference?
The difference is the difference between 5,000 and the 5% and the overlay. I'm not sure I'm following your question.
Suppose you took two districts. Make it very, very simple.
Sure. Well,
they had two districts, and they had a total of, 200,000 votes in them. And you merged them into one district with 200,000 votes. In the old districts, it would have required 10,000, right? 5% of 200,000. When they're merged together, even though nothing has happened except to change the district line, all of a sudden it drops to 5,000. And why isn't that completely arbitrary?
Anytime you draw a line, anytime you pick a number, 5,000, there's a measure of arbitrariness to it. This court certainly recognized that in Griffin. But
I'm talking about a case where before you had the merger, you required 10,000 votes. After you have the merger, and all that's happened is you've just erased a line between two districts and now one district, now you just require 5,000. Mm-hmm. That seems completely arbitrary, because what's changed, the fusion of the districts, doesn't seem to have anything to do with the reasons why you require X number of signatures.
Well, we require X number of signatures to show a modicum of public support.
But if the districts were separate, you'd require 10,000 to show the level of public support. When they're merged, even though it's completely irrelevant from the standpoint of showing public support, you drop the requirement to 5,000. Now, why isn't that completely arbitrary?
Well, 5,000 is, first of all, 5,000 reflects actual, reflects reality in certain districts.
It's the same. Look, look what my example was. You get two districts.
Your example, sure. In your example, it does not reflect reality as much as it does in other districts, in other actual districts.
It doesn't reflect any reality at all. And the only thing, I made my example really simple by saying you fuse two districts. Now, if you fuse pieces of two districts, you have to look at precinct-by-precinct votes. But it's still completely mechanical to say, yeah, they were in these precincts last year when they were in separate districts, there were 200,000 votes. And next year probably be another 200,000 votes. But because it's a new district, you only require 5,000 instead of the 5%, which would be twice as much. Right? That seems completely arbitrary.
It's a mechanical number. It's an easy-to-apply mechanical number because there is not
actual
empirical data.
Why not one number, 5,000 or 5% for every district? What does a new districting have to do with anything?
Because, again, there is empirical data on the actual district. I understand your point, Your Honor, about the fusion.
The figures are kept precinct by precinct.
Yes.
There's as much information about the new district, how it voted last year, how its electorate voted last election, as there is about the old districts.
Well, Your Honor, the district has been redrawn.
So what? What difference does that make?
The difference is that as it existed, the voter pool was different.
So what? If the votes are kept at the precinct level, which I hadn't realized, then there's absolutely nothing to prevent you from calculating with precision the how many voters there were in this new district in the last election.
Then Illinois in the years ending in two should go to the 5% rule. That's fine. It's a better reflection. That doesn't...
Or 5,000.
That's true.
His argument would be, well, look, if it's a new district, you think 5% is plenty, even if it's less than 5%. So if it's plenty for a new district, and there's no difference between new district and old district, why not 5,000 for everybody?
And equally true, why not 5% for everyone? So then the rule can just become 5% and he still
actually,
loses.
Actually, his argument is better because you've said 5,000 is enough for a new district. If it's enough for a new district, it has to be enough for the old districts. You can't reverse it.
We've said we'll take 5,000 because we don't have empirical district data. I understand your point that does not that could be construed as wrong, that we do have data that we can use for 5%.
It's completely arbitrary because it would take you like 5 minutes to compute
the end fact remains
of the new district.
The end fact remains in any meaningful constitutional analysis, 5% is not a severe burden on the rights.
No, but what if a state says, well, actually, we could do 5%, but we really think 5,000 is plenty. And then it says 5,000 is plenty for new districts, and old districts, there's no difference. So then you have a problem. If you really said 5,000 is plenty, and we, for some reason, maybe arithmetically challenged or something, we've kept a higher figure for the old districts.
This court has never required that sort of precision in determining what the exact number of signature requirements is.
Simple.
We're not in
a... Illinois have indicated...
Yes.
By your 5,000 rule for new districts, that you think 5,000 is enough, even if it's less than 5%. If it's enough in new districts, and there's no difference between new districts and old districts except a 5-minute computation, then it should be enough for the old district.
Illinois has acknowledged that 5,000 is enough in new districts because of, based on the belief that it doesn't have good enough data.
That's enough in old districts.
If it has good enough data and can make the computation easily, then they'll go with 5%. Illinois sticks with 5% more because it believes it's a better number.
The computation takes 5 minutes. You've got the precinct figures.
Then perhaps the General Assembly should change that and make 5% across the board. Any number drawn is arbitrary.
No, you don't understand. Illinois has decided 5,000 is enough, even if it's less than 5%.
Which it isn't always.
I know, it isn't always. But
Illinois, on the belief that it could not compute the based on empirical data, because they're non-existent. The districts didn't exist before.
It's out to lunch, right? Because we know it can compute it. So now you're saying
now you're saying
their law is based on just ridiculous mistakes.
No, I'm certainly not. Again, there's no facts one way or the other showing they can compute or what the computation will take or what other states do. There's speculation. There's a statement that, well, Indiana doesn't overlay. There's no facts before this court suggesting any of that is true.
You mean Illinois doesn't have voting figures by precinct?
Illinois now has voting figures by precinct.
So now there's no obstacle to having a uniform rule.
Well, again, though, the question is whether they impose a severe burden that has no regulatory justification. 5% is not a severe burden.
If you give me a reason, you know, I'll be really happy why a new district and an old district should be treated differently.
The district lines are redrawn. The voter
That's
pool.
That's not a meaningful difference if you have the voting numbers by precinct. It's just an arithmetical. It's one little arithmetical step more.
There are different voting turnouts in different districts based on a number of factors. One district could have markedly high voting turnout in one election. So the number, the 5% number, would be correspondingly great.
Reflected in the precinct figures.
Now, exactly, and that would be recent. But because of that, the voting turnout and that particular election, if you pull parts of precincts, or precincts from part of a district, parts of district into that, now it's not necessarily the case that the voting turnout in pulled in precinct A is going to be 55% where it was otherwise. We'd be inordinately weighing the burden placed on the new districts or the showing of support placed on the pulled-in precincts from the other district based on...
rely on a percentage of turnout, aren't you?
Yes.
And what's the difference whether you calculate the turnout by precinct or by district? I don't...
Well, this goes to the point that it's comparing apples and oranges. It's not simply as easy as pulling in the newly... enfranchised, for lack of a better word, districts into the precincts into the redrawn district. There could be other factors as to why this district received X turnout in the last election.
I mean,
that
this
don't
is
apply.
A measure of how many people are interested in voting.
That's true. It is a measure in that district, and different district-specific things could influence.
If a district is moved from one district to another, that affects the turnout?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
If a district is relocated, if a precinct finds itself in a new district as a result of redistricting,
yes.
Does that affect the turnout?
It could. Depend on candidate issues, things like that. I mean, you know, you could pull in a precinct, and it's certainly the case that sometimes, you know, it's possible that districts are gerrymandered. Different precincts containing different characteristics.
They're redistricted, obviously. That's the whole point of redistricting, right?
Sure. And the...
is there any indication that the turnout by district is more valid than the disaggregated turnout by
the 5,000 number, or the by precinct
voter interest and so forth.
No, but again, Your Honor, the point is that it's an apples and oranges comparison because what happened in a previous election, comparing it to this, you know, what happened in a previous district as it was then constituted does not necessarily translate. If you pull a subpart of that, they could have a different voting turnout, different voter interest, whatever, and put it into a new district, it does not necessarily flow. It does not necessarily follow. That's why it's an estimation. Certainly, you know, you say, okay, well, if this district, you know, they would have had the same turnout or the same relevant factors.
Well, that's
whatever.
Your argument. A new district has no history.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
That's the argument. Not that there are precinct numbers that can be found. You just have a new district.
Right.
And it has no history, so that whatever number you said is going to be arbitrary. It's just going to be a...
That's correct. We do not know how that district would vote, what the turnout would be, what the voter movement would be.
If you followed the Indiana technique, you wouldn't have this problem, would you?
That, again, though, is a question addressed to the Illinois General Assembly. It does not mean we have a constitutional problem. We're not imposing a severe burden.
But you wouldn't have the problem.
That's true. That's true, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Legner. Mr. Brown, how much time does he have? 5 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court? As the Court, I think, in the questioning of the state's attorney has recognized, there's a problem with choosing an arbitrary raw figure.
What about Judge Flom's question, and Mr. Brown made a similar point, that the creation of a new district alters the sort of political complexion, can change turnout, and so on. And as Judge Flom said, the new district has no history.
That's true, Your Honor.
And so maybe they think that, although this precinct method obviously is extremely simple and seems very sensible, but maybe they should give a break to the voters in the new district. That's essentially what you have. If it's in a new district, you don't need as much signatures, maybe because it's a new political entity, it's harder to get people interested or something of that sort. That's a little flimsy, but it's not a ridiculous argument, is it?
No, it's not ridiculous at all.
New polling places?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It may have new polling places?
Certainly, Your Honor. It may have a new...
No history that school was used versus another school being used? Or?
I think all of that's possible, Your Honor. But with a congressional district where you're talking about hundreds of thousands of
600,000 people?
Chances are you're not going to change it that much. Chances are you're going
to... Well, if you shrink a state from 11 to 10, that's a significant percentage drop in geographic impact, is it not?
True, Your Honor.
Which you pointed out, in Illinois and its history has probably lost a couple congresspersons in these last 30 years.
Also, one of the things that often happens when you create a new district is you have a lot more contenders, right?
Yes, Your Honor, because you don't necessarily have the incumbent.
So if they make it easier to get signatures, fewer signatures, that helps to, keep the pot boiling. Whereas in the old districts, they're usually safe seats and it's not going to be as much opportunity for newcomers.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm not dismissing out of hand the validity of choosing an arbitrary figure. There may be some wisdom to it. But it seems if you're going to choose an arbitrary figure, it ought to be a little bit closer to the number you usually require. And here, it's not anywhere near close. We're talking about 5,000 signatures versus 10,000 signatures. I think you're right, Your Honor. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense from the get-go.
What if they bought your argument and they said, well, the Supreme Court has allowed 5%, so we're going to go to 5%?
Well, Your Honor, ordinarily, with an equal protection violation, the state can choose one of two options. And so I think theoretically the state could go up to 5%, and I'll be here next year challenging that, and it's going to be a harder argument. But I will argue next time that there's proof that 5,000 works. So given that proof that 5,000 works, it's going to be hard on the state to argue that 5% is necessary across the board. 10,000 signatures is necessary across the board.
In these other districts, the 4th district apparently had the opposite relationship.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that just goes to show that this system really doesn't make any sense, to use then-Justice Rehnquist's words. It just doesn't make any sense. It appears to be kind of an historical accident. Not the choosing the arbitrary figure, but the actual number.
The candidate wouldn't have a lawsuit in the 4th district, I guess.
If they did it Indiana's way, we'd all be home and... But I think that Illinois, and I'm an Illinois, I went to Illinois, so I've got some roots here. But Illinois has already been caught 4 times violating Socialist Workers Party and the Equal Protection Clause, so it wouldn't surprise me to see a 5th. I'm not aware of any other states that have that track record, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, of course.
Mr. Brown, Mr. Legner mentioned the one district, I guess, where there was an advantage the other way, 4,200 versus 5,000.
Right.
Does record reflect what the history of this 5,000 versus 5% has been. We have any?
I don't. I just don't know, Your Honor. My surmise is that they actually chose the number because it tended to reflect the 5%.
Yeah, I just wonder whether there was legislative history that indicated why there was any relation, if any.
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't have that information.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much to both counsel for a very good argument, and the court will.